night and still make it out here. It's edifying to see you make the effort to come out. May God reward you greatly that you are not sleeping at home and just, you know, watching television, but you come out here tonight.
Reward.
Now, this is the month we pray for those who have died. You may remember the catechism that, you know, when a soul separates from the body, there is immediately a particular judgment.
Shall I ask you something, Father? Because on Saturday evening, when the anticipating mass day,
I know. There is a memo sent out to the whole diocese.
No, what I was trying to ask.
Yeah.
Since I attended it, because the mass that was said was the mass of all sins,
yes,
Saturday evening.
Yes.
And since I did not go to the Sunday morning mass, does it mean that I need Sunday morning mass?
No. You fulfill your Sunday obligation by attending the Saturday mass. There is a memo sent out to the whole diocese that because All Saints Day is a bit of a higher rank feast than All Souls, and so the Saturday anticipated mass was the mass of all saints, mm-hmm. even though it's an anticipated mass. So when you attend that mass, you fulfill your Sunday mass obligation already. And then the All Souls Day mass is only on November the 2nd. Yeah. So you are the second one who asked me that question already. Yeah. So when the soul separates from the body, there immediately the particular judgment. If a soul die in the state of sanctifying grace, the soul will be saved. But when somebody die in the state of mortal sin, the soul will be lost forever. But for a soul that is in a state of sanctifying grace, that soul can be already perfect, no stain of sin, then the soul will go straight to heaven. But the soul that is not yet perfect, there's still sin to atone for, and the soul will go to purgatory first, and then go to heaven. And then purgatory, how long or how severe the suffering would depend on the number, the seriousness of the sin committed here on earth. I would say, for the most part, normally we don't think about purgatory enough. Souls generally are there longer than we expect. And oftentimes, you know, we do not think about that we have to do penance for our sin. Because think about that. When we go to confession, yes, confession forgives the guilt of our sin. But normally confession don't forgive completely the temporal punishment of our sin. An example would be, if I steal Melissa $100,000, you know, she's so rich, $100,000. And then I'm really sorry. 100,000 euro, okay? I'm really sorry. And then Melissa say, "I forgive you. I forgive you." You know, she forgive me. Okay, that's good. But in justice, I still have to pay her back. If I've been using those money for shopping and stuff like that, I have to pay her back bit by bit. You know, money coming in, you know, bit by bit, I have to pay her back. That's the consequences of sin. In justice, I still have to pay her back. You know, even though she forgave me, I still have to pay her back in justice. So in baptism, in confession, because of the infusion of grace, you know, our guilt of sin is forgiven. The guilt is taken, okay? But the temporal punishment, we should not forget that one. When the priest gives us a penance, that's the first step for our temporal punishment, to make up for that. It's a penance, so that we make up for our sin. But think about that, it's only a first step, you know. Now quite often, you know, for us priests, we should give the penance according to the seriousness of the sin, okay? And usually I have some formula in my mind. One Hail Mary, one Our Father, three Hail Mary, five, seven, okay, a decade of rosary, two decades of the rosary, five of the rosary, okay. I got a formula, I got a whole scale in my mind, okay? But...
So So if you have
but I know in the depth of my heart, every time I give a penance, even though I might give a bit of a heavy-handed one, I know it's still far from what it deserves to be. The penance is only a beginning. And sometimes, you know, when I give a light penance, I tell God, you know, God, I will do some penance for that person here, because I know if I give him the penance that I know I should be giving, he will be scared not to come back again. You know, I just know I cannot.
Say someone 11 years old comes in, and let's say they stolen, would you give the same one as if like someone my age has stolen for a penance?
May not be the same. Age may not be the same. But also another thing to consider would be how long was their last confession? If they have been away for 5-10 years, you don't want to scare them away. In other they will not come back until another 5-10 years, right? You want them to feel welcome and that they will be able to come back, you know, more often. You know, if you want to work on them that they will be coming back more often because they probably need that, then it's important, you know, that their first coming back is not to be a scary experience, you know. Anyhow, so deep in my heart, I know that, you know, whenever we please give penance, the penance we will give is a piece of cake. Compared to what ought to be done, it's nothing. It's not much. It's a good beginning step. It's a baby step. But, you know, we should be doing on our own way more penance than what the priest gives us to do. And often that we don't think about that often enough. We don't do penance for the sins that we have already confessed, you know, for our daily venial sin. So I think you all remember that story. I told you that, you know, when Our Lady first appeared in Fatima, when she told Lucia that she came from heaven, Lucia asked her about two young ladies, about Melissa's age, even younger than Melissa, you know, who just died recently. And one Our Lady said she's already in heaven, the other one she said she is in purgatory and she will be there until the end of the world. And it's not surprising that can happen, because think about that one mortal sin, unrepented, can bring you to hell. And so it's not surprising that, you know, a forgiven mortal sin can still bring you a lot of years in purgatory. Now, another story that there's a book called, you know, The Vision of Heaven, Hell, and Purgatory. It's an interesting book about the vision of the saints. You know, St. Patrick Pio do have a couple examples in his life. You know, he in the choir loft where he prayed, he received the stigmata, the five wounds of Jesus. One day he heard candlesticks fell, you know, from the altar. And so he looked down and he called out, nobody answered. He cried out again, you know, see who is there. And then he saw beside the altar a young friar. And that young friar let Patrick Pio knew that he was actually a dead person. So the friar had been dead for 60 years. And his main sin was, when he was alive, his responsibility is to look after the church. And he was negligent in his duty. And so he was there for 60 years already. And Patrick Pio, he said, you know, being lack of diligence can cause somebody purgatory for 60 years. You know, what would happen if somebody do something worse, to commit different kind of sin? It will be even longer. And then another story of Patrick Pio was that, you know, for a while he was saying mass, you know, at a parish. And then the parish priest, he was the one who gave Patrick Pio instruction on theology. Now, oftentimes, it's a small parish. So when he was saying mass, you know, when the priest himself said mass, he would set vestment up behind the main altar. He rest there, he would say mass. But for Patrick Pio, when he said mass, he would set up the vestment elsewhere in the side altar, and he said mass there. So for a while, it was happening like that. And Patrick Pio, at first, he didn't ask why the reason. Later on, he asked the priest, why? You set me up another place to put the vestment on. What happened was that because whenever Pacha Pio said Mass, a spirit would appear. And that spirit is the soul of the former parish priest. He will be there at the place, you know, of the main altar area and pray and follow the Mass until the Mass is over. So he didn't want to set up anything to block his will to see the spirit praying. And then for about a month's time, the spirit, the former pastor, if I'm not mistaken, the story was to go to the current pastor and told him, now he's going, he won't come back anymore. And it caused me so terrible and so much in purgatory for what sin, that after Mass, that priest was a good man. But after Mass, he oftentimes, instead of making a proper thanksgiving, he rushed to his friends and have coffee. So that's his habit. After Mass, coffee with friends. But didn't make his thanksgiving properly. And so he was in purgatory for a long time for that. I don't drink coffee anyway. No. So you know that, you know, purgatory can be longer than we expect. And St. Augustine, he really pointed out that the fire of purgatory is more terrible than all that man can suffer in this life. And St. Thomas Aquinas believed the least thing there is greater than the greatest on earth. And St. Bernard, he said, whatever we may neglect here below, we shall there pay for 100-fold. Now, so that's why, you know, we think about the souls in purgatory, they deserve our compassion and love and prayer. Because their suffering there can be long, you know. Something can be there for years already and nobody on earth ever remember them anymore. You know, a lot of souls are like that. They were there, the people on earth, they cry, they say some prayer and then they forget about them. So a lot of souls being abandoned in purgatory. So remember, when I die, don't abandon me.
That
is only God knows, right? Objectively, to kill oneself is a mortal sin. You know, objectively, it's a mortal sin. Some psychiatrists do think that a good number of people who commit suicide may not be completely responsible for what they are doing. So in that, if that's the truth, that is the benefit of the doubt there, because to have mortal sin, you need to have knowledge, and you do it with your own free will. And of course, there's a story that a man who jumped off the bridge, he was able to, by Our Lady prayer, make the act of contrition before he died. And then his wife was, of course, really, really, really extremely sad and upset after his husband committed suicide. And she went to St. John Vianney. And St. John Vianney, you know, there's a long line up, you know, for him to wait for confession. St. John Vianney actually came out and went to that woman and comforted her, saying that, you know, don't be so sad, your husband is saved. Because of his devotion to Our Lady, Our Lady helped him before, you know, he reached the water, and he was able to have the grace of perfect contrition. So that is a possibility that they might be saved, but we just don't know, you know, because objectively, of course, it's a mortal sin to kill oneself, the action itself. But because, you know, to have serious sin, you need to have serious matter, sufficient knowledge, and also sufficient freedom of the will. And so sometimes, some psychiatrists do point out that they may be lacking of the other two elements in some state situation. Yeah.
So therefore, people who ask for assisted suicide and things like that,
That's one will be a bit more uncomfortable, because, you know,
you ask for it, then you do it with
knowledge and also freedom. You know, you got more time to make your decision, right?
Yeah.
If it is in a situation that the person
is depressed
and cannot control, you know, you know, but if it's somebody who might be, you know, deliberating there for a long, long time, you know, that I cannot make a judgment of how responsible, but I just don't feel comfortable in the whole situation at all about the salvation. You know, it's pretty risky ground there. So in the souls in purgatory, there are two kinds of suffering: the pain of loss, that they cannot see God, and also the pain of sense. There is a description of fire, you know, that burn not the body but the soul. Now, but also we think about, you know, on the one side we contemplate on the intensity of their suffering. On the other hand, you know, we should not lose sight of the intensity of their joy. The souls in purgatory also have great joy because they are sure that they are making to heaven. I think there was even a story that a saint, you know, because he was being falsely accused of being unjust, and the only witness was a dead man. The saintly bishop actually raised the dead man back to life to testify in court against his own children, who were accusing the bishop being unjust in dealing with business with his father, who is a dead man. So after all this drama, you know, people scared, you know, of the dead man testifying in court, you know, the bishop offered the man, you know, if you want, I can pray to God, you can live for more years on earth. But the dead man said, no, I don't want to come back. I'm in purgatory, but I prefer to be there than coming back. Because over there, he's sure of his salvation. Coming back, you are not as sure. So he would prefer to be back in purgatory than to come back here on earth. So, you know, the soul there, they suffer willingly. St. Catherine of Genola, she is she has a book, you know, about purgatory that she wrote, a little book, Fire of Love, called Fire of Love. And she described the soul there, they suffer joyfully and also willingly. And she described the image that she saw that, you know, I will just read that to you. When I look at God, I see no gate to paradise. And yet he who wishes to enter there does so. Because God is all mercy. God stands before us with open arms to receive us into his glory. But while I see the divine essence to be of such purity, far greater than can be imagined, that the soul in which there is even the least note of imperfection would rather cast itself into a thousand hells than to find itself thus stinging in the presence of the divine majesty. Therefore the soul, understanding that purgatory has been ordained to take away those things, casts itself therein, and seems to itself to have found great mercy, in that it can rid itself there of the impediments that is the sting of sin. So the soul there, you know, they really suffer willingly. The soul in hell, they suffer with hatred and despair. You know, the soul in purgatory, even though their suffering is so intense, almost like hell, but they suffer with joy and peace and a certain hope, the certain hope of making to heaven. And so in a sense, you know, we can, on this earth, sometimes we have human suffering. It can be physical, it can be spiritual, it can be emotional. And when we suffer, we can have the reaction of it like the soul in hell. We can be bitter, grumpy, and cursing and despair, you know, if that kind of attitude. But that's a bit like the soul in hell. But we can be slightly so in purgatory, suffer with resignation, doing the will of God, you know, hoping in God, you know, seeing that as a penance, you know, that make us more pure to be able to see God. So I think it's important that, you know, when we have suffering, that we respond not like the soul in hell, always cursing, you know, using foul language, you know, bitter, but, you know, try to be patient. Patient is a virtue, right? Patient is a virtue, and accept that doing the will of God. For them, you know, the souls in purgatory, for them, their greatest suffering is that they offended God, that they did not do enough penance, more than the actual pain that they experience in purgatory. Because in purgatory, the soul there, they love God more than they love themselves. And so their only consolation is the will of God. They know the will of God is that they should be there, and so they suffer willingly. And they most regret that they have not followed the will of God while they were on earth. That's their greatest regret. Because in purgatory, of course, anybody who is saved should love God more than they love themselves. Because we are in the great commandment, we have to love God above all, you know. And of course, you know, but we keep in mind that love is an act of will, huh? Sometimes we can love people, or even sometimes love ourselves with a kind of affection or emotional intensity that seems to be greater than we love God. But love is an act of will. It's not about emotion. So there was a girl, you know, she was a bit concerned because she said, you know, when my mom died, I cried. But when I offend God, I didn't cry. Does that mean that I didn't love God more than I love my mom? So she was really concerned. You know, the emotion seems, you know, more intense for her mom than for God. But the priest, you know, put her conscience at ease, you know, asked her the question, because in the act of will, right, to love God. She asked her, you know, but if you can bring your mom back to life by committing a mortal sin, are you going to do it? And she said, no, of course I will not do it, because that offends God. So you love God more than you love your mom. So because, you know, it's an act of will, when we have the determination not to put any creature before God by committing a mortal sin, that's how we love God above everything. So it's really important for us, you know, to have that, you know, desire to love God above all. Now, you know, the souls in purgatory, you know, on the one hand, they suffer so much that we should pray for them. On the other hand, they have so much joy there that they pray for us, because they are being loved by God, and so their prayer is powerful before God. And so there are stories that the souls, actually, they can help people on earth in a big way. They are powerful in helping us in their prayer. So the soul there, they wait there, you know. And of course, there are some prayers that are really powerful for the souls. You know, the Mass is the most powerful prayer, but also, next to the Mass is the Station of the Cross. It's a powerful prayer for the souls in purgatory. And also the Holy Rosary is a really powerful prayer. One of the Dominican saints, you know, by praying many rosaries, he helped more than a million souls to help them to get to heaven.
Wow.
So it's a rosary, it's a powerful prayer. Now, I think I've shared this book with you before, you know, my favorite. An unpublished manuscript on purgatory. This book was, the incident happened in the 19th century, and the book was published first time in...
Why is it called an unpublished book?
In 1967. When it first being circulated, the manuscript, it was only for private reading. It was only among certain a group of people that they circulate among themselves. Only later on, it was published and made known to other people. So I think that's why it's called Unpublished Manuscript on Purgatory. So it was happened that there was a nun. She died at the age of 36. There was an older nun in the convent. After a while, she started to hear people signing. And then she looked around, nobody around. So she got scared. But the noise kept on coming back. Eventually, the noise started to speak, and she identified herself as that nun of 36 who died. During her lifetime, she did give the older nun and Mother Superior a hard time. No, she was a kind of nun that was a bit hard to handle. She can be a bit stubborn, you know, that's nun. So she was a bit, you know, so she actually went through different stages in purgatory, including the lowest level of purgatory. So that's the time when she couldn't make any noise. And then when she was in the second level of purgatory, that she can start to make some noise. And then the nun on earth is chosen by God in a special way. The nun who died had the mission to always communicate with her and to remind her how to become a holy nun. So the nun on earth, in the proportion that she become holy, she can help the nun who was dead. So basically they're helping each other. The nun who died always give advice to the nun who was alive how to become a holy nun. And the nun who was alive, the more she became holy, the more she would be able to help the nun who was dead. So it was for some years in the later part of the 19th century that the communication was going on. And so here is an interesting, really interesting book. After you read that, you have that desire to become more holy. You know. Anyhow, one of the things I mentioned already is the three levels of purgatory. The lowest one, the middle one, and the one closer to heaven. And of course, even within each level, there are different degrees and stages, okay? So, I will read you about the different... Ready for the journey? Okay, let's go to the lowest part of purgatory first, okay? So, she said, I can tell you about the different degrees of purgatory because I have passed through them. In the great purgatory, that means the lowest one, there are several stages. In the lowest and most painful, like a temporary hell, are the sinners who have committed terrible crimes during life and whose death surprised them in that state. Pretty scary, yeah? You are committing crime and you die in that state without much preparation. It was almost a miracle that they were saved. And often by the prayers of holy parents or other pious persons. Sometimes they did not even have time to confess their sins and the world thought them lost. But God, whose mercy is infinite, gave them at the moment of death the contrition necessary for their salvation on account of one or more good actions which they performed during life. For such souls, purgatory is terrible. It is a real hell with this difference, that in hell they curse God, whereas we bless Him and thank Him for having saved us. Remember that nun, she was in that region for a little while. Okay, and then next to this come, still in the lowest part, next to this come the souls who, though they did not commit great crimes like the others, were indifferent to God. They don't care about religion. They did not fulfill their Easter duties, and were also converted at the point of death. So they neglect receiving communion and confession every year, the Easter duty, and they were only converted at the point of death. Perhaps they were unable to receive Holy Communion. They were in purgatory for the long years of indifference. They suffer unheard of pains and are abandoned either without prayers or if they are sad for them. They are not allowed to profit by them. You know, sometimes, you know, God in His justice, some of the souls in the lowest part, even people pray for them, the prayer is not applying to them at all. You know, and also, I think in this book also mentioned that oftentimes God deal with us in purgatory according to the way we deal with the holy souls here on earth. If we remember to pray for the dead here on earth, then after we die, God allow the prayers apply to us. If we don't care much, you know, we neglect them, then God allow us to be neglected by people after we die. There are, in this stage, a purgatory religious of both sects who were timid, neglectful of their duties, indifferent toward Jesus. So remember the religious, you know, the nun in this story, in this incident, but also, you know, Patrick Pio saw, you know, the friar, you know, who was, you know, neglectful of his duty to look after the church, and so he was in purgatory for 60 years. You know, sometimes religious can be in purgatory longer than lay people. because, you know, they were given more, you know, to from God, and also so whatever, even in their daily life, you know, their action will have influence on the salvation of souls. So I do remember there is a book on purgatory mentioned, you know, some Carmelite nuns, even some of those who do miracles in their lifetime, they could be in purgatory for 30, 40, 50 years after they die, you know, because, you know, they were given more. And sometimes, you know, the people, you know, they may have even high degree of glory in heaven, but they have more longer time in purgatory because, you know, sometimes for something more precious, you need longer time for purification. So sometimes, you know, religious, you know, but often listen to that, also priests, who did not exercise their sacred ministry with the reverence due to the sovereign majesty, and who did not instill the love of God sufficiently into the souls confined to their care. I was in this stage of purgatory. You know, so priests can be there for a long time too, you know. Oh, pray for me when I die, you know. Yeah. That's why I do Divine Mercy a number of times, you know, honor the Immaculate Heart as much as I can, you know, pray more rosary, you know, because I'm scared too, you know. And some of the people, saints who are there, my friends who wanted me to be a bishop, you know, that's unthinkable. That's the most easy way to lose your soul, to be a bishop, you know. Don't we decide that on me. Lord, oh. Messy,
you'd
messy.
Be a terrible bishop.
Yeah. So I won't be one anyway. Okay, anyhow. Yeah. Because once you are in high place, you know, the higher you are, the more you are responsible before God, you know. So I don't mind if the bishop give me a smaller parish, I would be happy. You know. If I get older, he told me to retire, that's okay too. You know. You know. Yeah. As long as I become holy and make to heaven. And help people make to heaven, that's all I want. Yeah. So anyhow, lowest part. Oh, a bit scary, huh? Okay. So don't forget me after I die, you know. Yeah.
Who are you again?
Yeah. Yeah. Go to Mass for me every day, you know, pray many rosary, you know, yeah. Because I will need that. The second purgatory, so the middle part, are the souls of those who die with venial sins not fully expiated before death, of mortal sins that have been forgiven, but for which they have not made entire satisfaction to the divine justice. In this part of purgatory, there are also different degrees according to the merits of each soul. Thus, the purgatory of the consecrated souls, or of those who have received more abundant graces, is longer and far more painful than that of ordinary people of the world. Okay, thank you for letting me know about that. So, again, you know, the more grace you receive, the more you have to give account to God, huh? So, those who are graced, huh, have to be more holy, huh? Elizabeth, huh? Remember? Lastly, there is purgatory of desire. So that's the top part of the purgatory now, the third level. And children who die, you know, quite often they go to that purgatory. Purgatory of desire, which is called the threshold, close to heaven. Very few escape this. So almost everybody who die have to go to at least this one. Huh? To avoid it altogether, one must ardently desire heaven and the vision of God. That is where than people think. Because even pious people, pious group, you know, even pious people are afraid of God and have not therefore a sufficiently strong desire of going to heaven. This purgatory has its very painful martyrdom like the others. The privation of the sight of our loving Jesus add to the intense suffering. So I think some other book that I remember I read, this part of the purgatory has no fire. The main suffering is the desire for God. There's no fire in that part of the purgatory, of the upper part, of the one that closer to heaven. You know, thinking about that desire for heaven, I remember a saint, St. Joseph Cafasso, the spiritual director of St. John Bosco. He helped condemn criminal who faced the death penalty to prepare for death. And he would teach them, you know, a cosmic love of acts of love for God, you know, try to be, have that perfect act of love for God before they die. But also to offer up their execution as a penance, offer up their death as a penance. And oftentimes that last moment of love for God and that spirit of penance can have so much an effect that it can wipe away all our temporal punishments. So then Joseph Capasso even went so far as to promise those criminals to bypass purgatory and go straight to heaven. And he also asked those those people to do him some favor, to deliver some message to some people in heaven. Now, another thing, St. Catherine of Siena, you know, one time she did help a condemned criminal to die. And that criminal at the end, before he died, he really have that strong act of love for God. He did have a spirit of penance, accept his execution, you know, as a penance. And so, and he showed sign of love and contrition before he died. And St. Catherine saw his soul after he was being executed go straight to heaven. And even in this book, you know, it's mentioned about a lady, she was not baptized. And she was drawn at the sinking of a ship. But because she has such a deep contrition and love for God, and so she had a wonderful baptism of desire. And so that itself also wiped away all her sin, and she was able to go straight to heaven. So, you know, the hour of death, you know, our love for God, our spirit of penance, at that time is important. And so that's why, you know, when we pray the Hail Mary, we pray, you know, to help us at the hour, pray for us at the hour of our death. It's almost every time you pray the Hail Mary, you make a promise with Our Lady, you know, say, you know, come to help me at the hour of my death. And of course, there are a few devotions that really have promise about salvation or help us at the hour of death. You know, the First Friday, Communion and Preparation for the Nine First Friday. The five first Saturday, you know, Our Lady actually said, you know, those who embrace the devotion of the Immaculate Heart, you know, Our Lady said she promised eternal life. Huh? And then, but also, you know, remember we went to the Shrine of Blessed Alexandria in Portugal. And actually, she actually also, Jesus told her, you know, if people do six first Thursday, you know, to receive communion, and also spend an hour of adoration of the Holy Eucharist, Jesus also promised heaven for those six of the first Thursday to honor Jesus in the Holy Eucharist as well. You know, so first Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you know, we always just find something to do. You know, that's going to be a good way of helping us to have a good death.
Is this considering the significance of the first
month?
Like,
huh?
Like, is it the significance for the first rather
than
the second or third? Or
it's beginning of the month.
Maybe it's the beginning. I know. They didn't specify why it's the first one, but not the last one. But we always ask for the first one.
Maybe it's just easy. Like maybe it's like, oh, well, I did on this first one, and then I might as well do the next.
Or it's also a good way to start the month well, you know, so that the rest of the month. In here, you know, the nun who was alive asked the nun who was dead a good number of questions. You know, for example, what is the best way to honor Saint Michael the Archangel? And then the soul after answered that actually a good way to honor him is to promote devotion to the souls in purgatory. Because St. Michael is the one responsible to bring the souls from purgatory to heaven. And so he really loved to do it. So if we honor souls to the purgatory, spread devotion to the holy souls, then we also, in a way, we honor St. Michael. And then also, do you know what happens on earth? And then the answer is, I only know what happens in so far as God wills it. My knowledge is very limited. I have known a little about the community, but that is all. I know nothing about what goes on in the souls of other people, except in your case. That is because God allows this for your profession. And then, do you know each other in purgatory? Yes, in the manner in which souls know. There are no names in the other world. You cannot compare purgatory and earth. When the soul is free and released from its mortal self, I mean from the body, its name is buried in the grave with the body. I can only give you a small insight into the nature of purgatory. By the light which God gives you, you are better able to understand it than others. But what is all that is to reality? Here we are lost in the will of God, whereas on earth, no matter how great the sin is, self-will always has a certain hold on him. As for us, we now have no more self-will at all. We know and realize only that which it pleases God to let us know, nothing more. The other question, do you speak to each other in purgatory? Souls communicate with each other when God permits it, and after the manner of souls, but without words. Yes, it is true I speak to you, but are you a spirit? Would you understand me if I did not pronounce words? But for myself, as God wills it so, I understand you without your pronouncing any words with your lips. There is communication between spirits and souls on earth. Thus, when you have a good thought or a holy desire, they have been communicated to you by your guardian angel, or by some saint, or sometimes by God himself. That is the language of souls. Okay, let me see any other question that she asked her. Okay. A certain and unprepared death acts of God's justice or of his mercy. Such deaths are sometimes an act of justice, sometimes one of mercy. When a soul is timid and God knows it is well prepared to appear before him, he takes it out of this world suddenly to spare it the terrors it might experience at the last moment. Sometimes also God takes souls in his justice. They are not for this reason eternally lost, but their purgatory is much more severe and prolonged than it would otherwise have been, since they were either deprived of the last sacraments or received them hastily, so were unprepared for their passage into eternity. Others, having filled up the measure of their crimes and having remained deaf to all inspiration of divine grace, are taken by God out of this world so that they may not excite his vengeance still more. Is the fire of purgatory like that of earth? Yes, with this difference, that the fire of purgatory is a purification prescribed by God's justice, and that of earth is very mild compared to that of purgatory. It is a shadow compared to the furnace of divine justice. How can a soul burn? By a just and express permission of God, the soul which is the will, is that C-U-L-P-R-I-T? Culprit. For the body only obeys the soul, suffer as if the body were suffering. Have you ever seen any evil committed by a dead body? This is a challenging one. Tell me, in what does true sanctity consist? Oh, challenging question, huh? What is holiness consist, you know, true holiness? You know that very well, but as you wish it, I shall repeat it to you, though I have already told it to you many times. True sanctity consists in renouncing oneself from morning to night, in being a living sacrifice, in constantly putting aside the human self, in allowing God to work in and with you as he pleases, to receive the graces he sends you with profound humility, recognizing yourself quite unworthy of them, and live as constantly as possible in the divine presence, to perform all your actions under the eye of God, wanting him only to be the witness of your efforts and your only reward. This is the sanctity wished for and demanded by Jesus of all those who desire to be his own, who be his only, and to live his life. All the rest is pure illusion. So I think in the this is an interesting question. Are many Protestants saved? By the mercy of God, a certain number of Protestants are saved, but their purgatory is for many long and rigorous. It is true they have not abused grace like many Catholics, but neither have they had the marvelous graces of the sacraments and the other helps of the true religion. Thus their expiation in purgatory is prolonged. I think it's interesting. I'm speaking lower than usual because for the last 8 days you have been speaking in a low voice, a too low a voice to God in saying the divine office. When you begin to speak louder, I will do the same.
I still have this picture in my head of her, like
Divine office is the breviary, right?
Yeah, I know, but then the prayers like
it's just mentioned here. It's only divine office that she mentioned. I cannot give an answer.
What about
She was like doing better.
Seeing aloud the prayers at mass.
Yeah.
You know, making responses when you should.
Okay, this is another question we have. No, I don't know. Do religious and those of the same family communicate together? In purgatory, as in heaven, religious and those of the same family are not always together. Souls do not all merit the same punishments or the same reward. Still, in purgatory, we do recognize others, and if God permits it, we may communicate with one another. Does everyone in purgatory know the thoughts of the others as they will be known at the last judgment? In general, we do not know about the thoughts of one another, except in some rare cases when God has particular designs with regard to certain souls, but it is to feel that he acts in this way. That the souls in purgatory console each other mutually? In purgatory, our only consolation, our only hope is in God alone. On earth, God sometimes allows us to be consoled in our sufferings of soul or body by the heart of a friend. But then again, if the love of Jesus does not fill that heart, the consolations are vain. Here, the souls are lost, drawn, as it were, in the divine will, and God alone can soften their pains. Each soul is tormented according to its guilt, but all have one common sorrow that surpasses all the rest, the absence of Jesus, who is our very element, our life, our all, and we are separated from him through our own fault. I forgot where, but I think in this book it's also mentioned that, on average, people spend like 30-some years in purgatory. And then she also mentioned that, God wants people to be holy here on earth already. But, a lot of people on earth, they don't care much becoming holy. So they wasted their whole life. And so when they die, they have to start all over again to spend almost a lifetime of time in purgatory in order to be holy. So a lot of interesting details, just too many to mention them all. But actually the whole book is online. If you Google an unpublished manuscript on purgatory, the whole thing is online on the internet. So you can read through the whole thing, when you cannot sleep at night, it's good reading. It's a good reading. Yeah.